Savai.
Savai.
Ilayam.
Ilayam.
Purusha.
Purusha.
Puratano.
Puratano.
Ya.
Ya.
Eka.
Eka.
Asi.
Asi.
Avivesha.
Avivesha.
Atmani.
Atmani.
Agre.
Agre.
Gunebhyo.
Gunebhyo.
Jagad.
Jagad.
Atmanishvare.
Atmanishvare.
Nimilitatman,
Nimilitatman,
Nishi,
Nishi,
Supta,
Supta,
Saktishu,
Saktishu,
Savaikilayam Puru. Savaikilayam Purusha Puratano.
Savaikilayam Purusha Puratano.
Eka Asid Avivesha Atmani.
Eka Asid Avivesha Atmani.
Agre Gunebhyo Jagaratmanishvare.
Agre Gunebhyo Jagaratmanishvare.
Nimilitatman Nishi Supta Shaktishu.
Nimilitatman Nishi Supta Shaktishu.
Savaikilayam Purusha Puratano.
Savaikilayam Purusha Puratano.
Ya Eka Asid Avivesha Atmani.
Ya Eka Asid Avivesha Atmani.
Agre Gunebhyo Jagaratmanishvare.
Agre Gunebhyo Jagaratmanishvare.
Nimilitatman Nishi Supta Shaktishu.
Nimilitatman Nishi Supta Shaktishu.
Savaikilayam Purusha Puratano.
Savaikilayam Purusha Puratano.
Ya Eka Asid Avivesha Atmani.
Ya Eka Asid Avivesha Atmani.
Agre Gunebhyo Jagaratmanishvare.
Agre Gunebhyo Jagaratmanishvare.
Nimilitatman Nishi Supta Shaktishu.
Nimilitatman Nishi Supta Shaktishu.
Savaikilayam
Purusha Puratano. Ya Eka Asid Avivesha Atmani.
Agre
Gunebhyo Jagaratmanishvare.
Nimilitatman Nishi Supta Shaktishu.
Savaikilayam Purusha Puratano.
Savaikilayam Purusha Puratano.
Ya Eka Asid Avivesha Atmani.
Ya Eka Asid Avivesha Atmani.
Agre Gunebhyo Jagadatmanishvare.
Agre Gunebhyo Jagadatmanishvare.
Nimilitatman Nishi Supta Shaktishu.
Nimilitatman Nishi Supta Shaktishu.
Savaikilayam Purusha Puratano.
Ekasid Avivesha Atmani. Agre Gunebhyo Jagaratmanishvare. Nimilitatman Nishi Supta Shaktishu. Savaikilayam Purusha Puratano. Ya Eka Asid Avivesha Atmani. Agre Gunebhyo Jagaratmanishvare. Nimilitatman Nishi Supta Shaktishu.
Savaikilayam Purusha Puratano.
Ya Eka Asid Avivesha Atmani.
Agre Gunebhyo Jagaratmanishvare.
Nimilitatman Nishi Supta Shaktishu.
They said, here he is, the original personality of Godhead, as we definitely remember him. He alone existed before the manifested creation of the modes of nature. And in him only, because he is the Supreme Lord, all living beings merge, as if sleeping at night, their energy suspended. Purport. There are two types of dissolution of the manifested cosmos. At the end of every 4,320,000,000 solar years, when Brahma, the Lord of one particular universe, goes to sleep, there is one annihilation. And at the end of Lord Brahma's life, which takes place at the end of Brahma's 100 years of age, in our calculation, at the end of 8,640,000,000 times 30 times 12 times 100 solar years, there is a complete annihilation of the entire universe. And in both the periods, both the material energy called the Mahatattva and the marginal energy called Jivatattva merge into the person of the Supreme Lord. The living beings maintain a sleep within the body of the Lord until there is another creation of the material world. And that is the way of the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the material manifestation. The material creation is affected by the interaction of the three modes of material nature, set in action by the Lord. And therefore it is said here that the Lord existed before the modes of material nature were set in motion. In the Shruti Mantra, it is said that only Vishnu, the Supreme Lord, existed before the creation. And there was no Brahma, Shiva, or other demigods. Vishnu means the Mahavishnu, who is lying on the causal ocean. By his breathing only, all the universes are generated in seeds and gradually develop into gigantic forms, with innumerable planets within each and every universe. The seeds of universes develop into gigantic forms, in the way seeds of a banyan tree develop into numberless banyan trees. This Mahavishnu is the plenary portion of Lord Sri Krishna, who is mentioned in the Brahma Samhita as follows. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the original personality of Godhead, Govinda, whose plenary portion is the Mahavishnu. All the Brahmas, the heads of the universes, live only for the period of his exhaling, after the universes are generated from the pores of his transcendental body. Brahma Samhita 5.58. Thus Govinda, or Lord Krishna, is the cause of Mahavishnu also. The ladies talking about this Vedic truth must have heard it from authoritative sources. An authoritative source is the only means of knowing about transcendental subject matter definitely. There is no alternative. The merging of the living beings into the body of Mahavishnu takes place automatically at the end of Brahma's 100 years. But that does not mean that the individual living being loses his identity. The identity is there, and as soon as there is another creation by the supreme will of the Lord, all the sleeping, inactive living entities are again let loose to begin their activities in the continuation of past different spheres of life. It is called suptotita nyaya, or awakening from sleep and again engaging in one's respective continuous duty. When a man is asleep at night, he forgets himself, what he is, what his duty is, and everything of his waking state. But as soon as he awakens from slumber, he remembers all that he has to do and thus engages himself again in his prescribed activities. The living beings also remain merged in the body of Mahavishnu during the period of annihilation. But as soon as there is another creation, they arise to take up their unfinished work. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 8.18.20. The Lord existed before the creative energy was set in action. The Lord is not a product of the material energy. His body is completely spiritual, and there is no difference between his body and himself. Before creation, the Lord remained in his abode, which is absolute and one. So this is then spoken by the ladies in Hastinapur as the Lord is leaving Hastinapur. So on the roof they are observing these activities and they are speaking this philosophy here. So now Prabhupada points out they would have heard it from authority, because only from authority then we can actually know the Lord, we can actually know anything. There's no question of by speculation understanding. Speculation has its limits. Right? Speculation is used to contemplate what we have heard from authority and then try to connect it to what we observe. That's the practical use of it. So both the Vaishnavas and the non-devotees use this method of speculation. But for the devotees, it is based on reality. It is based on authority. So it is not considered improper. Does this make sense? In other words, the details that are given, how the modes of nature work, how the Lord is created, destroyed, how he's entered everything, the platform of the living entities, the Lord, Brahman, all these things that are something that we can apply in our life. We've heard from authority, then we use it to contemplate. Prabhupada even generally avoids using the term speculation, because we generally reserve that for discussing about the Mayavadis and the other, you know, non-devotional elements. But the principle of speculation is the same. But here speculation means it's based on authority. And your purpose is to see that quality, or that, yeah, that, the point. The principle that's established by authority in the detail of our daily life. Right? So in that, speculation is used. You try to make it work. You think, well, is it this way, is it that way? And then you go and then by service, by association, by the contemplation, by study, then we come to understand and then with practice realize these truths. Does that make sense? So then we must hear from authority. You don't hear from authority, then that speculation is bogus. Then it's improper. It has no use. Because without authority, nothing functions. It will not. You will never get a good result. You can get a partial result, because if you take what you see in front of you, that is the practical application of the philosophy and shastra as Krishna has given it. Does that make some sense? That is why the mental speculators can come up with some idea of what's going on and make some kind of bit of practical result. Right? The scientists and the other philosophers and the academics, they observe the world. And then from this, then they come up with some understanding. And then they try to apply this. Because their premise they started from is incorrect. Therefore, the final conclusion is also incorrect. Though in between, they might get a few things to work. Right? You understand? That's what's going on. So that's why, because it's only Krishna's creation. Sometimes we may have the idea that we are, you know, here, we're, you know, a bunch of, you know, how you say, a little out of the ordinary people, you know, who are doing something that nobody else is doing. And, you know, sometimes we're, you know, a little shy about it, or even, not exactly ashamed, but something between shy and ashamed. It's more of a dynamic shyness. You know, like we're outspoken in trying to, you know, be normal, or we don't want to be too weird. You know, but we're, it's, do you understand what I'm trying to say? So it's a common thing. So, but the principle is what we are saying is normal, we want to fit into. The only reason that it's so-called normal or it functions is because it is Krishna's creation. You know, the karmis don't get the credit for it, right? I mean, they've worked hard, they've observed it, they've tried to do it, but they don't get the credit for the material energy. That's Krishna's, right? So it's working like that. So we try to understand and apply. We hear from authority, then it has meaning. Not hearing from authority, we'll hear from the karmis. It's okay, we might start, get some information there, start from there, but unless it's connected to authority, it won't work. And it's always easier to go from top down and bottom up, right? Like that. Seeing that the root is up, right? It's easier to build a building from the foundation and go up, right? So this material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. That means the foundation is up. So you start up and then build down. That's why the mental speculators, you know, are backwards. They start with the roof of the building and then try to build it down to the foundation. It never happens. You know, or they try with start with the leaves of the trees and then try to create the rest of the tree. It won't work. You start with the root of the tree, then you can create the rest. Does that make some sense? So, yeah, that's the principle. So we see is then these ladies on the roof, they're talking these eternal truths they've heard from authority. So now here there's a basic principle that's there. This is something very important to catch from the scriptures. Is we have to be able to see what is making it work. What is it functioning? What is the elements that we're dealing with? Otherwise, the tendency will go, okay, well, I'm not standing on the roof of a palace, right? And Lord Krishna is not leaving and going back to Dwarka, so this doesn't apply to me. Right? This is the tendency. You know, or I'm not sitting on a chariot, and I don't have on two quivers, and I can't shoot bows with both hands, and I, you know, definitely haven't conquered sleep, and Krishna is not speaking the Gita to me, so it may not apply. Right? But, you know, that's the thing. We laugh because it's funny, but we see when push comes to shove and something goes seriously wrong in your life, that second you doubt everything about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, why you joined, what are you doing here, what is it doing for me, what benefit did I get from it. It immediately comes right down to, you know, the nuts and bolts of gain and safety. What's the economics of it, and is that economics secure? And because something went wrong, it's not secure, therefore I doubt at the process it gets me the economics. Right? Because it can't secure it. What's the use of economics if it's not secure? If somebody comes and says, here, it's $1 million, and then the wind blows and blows it away, what's the use? Right? You know, you've got to have it, you've got to keep it. Right? So this is the point, is we have to be able to get the principles. Then we'll get through this. Because the mind is very clever. Mind is very tricky. Because it just accepts and rejects. It doesn't work on the principle of intelligence. Intelligence is another function of the subtle body. So the intelligence says this and this is similar or this and this is different. It makes no judgment. But the mind goes, I like this, I don't like this. It doesn't matter whether it's similar or different. Right? You can like two things because you can like two colors because what do you call it? It means you have contrast. What's the other?
Then.
Complement, yeah. Okay. Two colors complement or two colors contrast. Right? But there's something is there. And of course in both. In difference, there must be something common to make a difference. Right? Or to make them the same, there must be two different things that you can make the same. Otherwise, how do you make them the same if they're the same? They have to be different. So you get the principle of the similarity and difference both. It's just which is prominent. So now a principle we see here, we see the example of, he's giving, the discussion is about the modes of nature and the disillusion and the living entity merging into the Lord. And then the example that Prabhupada gives then is on the man going to sleep and waking up and performing his work again. So this is all on one principle, this principle of the supto-tita nyaya. So it's one principle, though it seems different. We'll think, the living entities merging into the Lord, into Mahavishnu at the end of Brahma's life, or the living entities merging into Kirodakshaya Vishnu at the end of Brahma's day, or the person going to sleep and waking up in the morning are three different things. Right? Okay, maybe we can kind of put together the living entities merging into Mahavishnu or into Kirodakshaya Vishnu, but those two are definitely different from me going to sleep and waking up. Right? But it's basically the same. The only difference is when you sleep, everything could as well be annihilated and you wouldn't know it, right? How many times you use the thing? A bomb could go off and they wouldn't know it, right? They're so deep in sleep. Point is as far as we're concerned, it doesn't exist. But it's still there, it's still manifest. But when we merge into the Lord at the end of the day or life of Brahma, then we don't know it doesn't exist and it doesn't exist. But the principle is not that. The principle is, when we wake up, we're going to do the same thing we did before we went to sleep. That's the real working principle, right? The dissolution, the creation, is only a medium or a tool to get to create again what it is we've done, right? Does that make some sense? Material world is a reflection, so it's temporary. So it will manifest and unmanifest. So that is, the world is created, the world is destroyed, is not the important principle. The material world is not here just to be created and destroyed. The material world is here because the living entity wants to enjoy the material energy. Right? That's the point. So when you wake up after in the morning or wake up after coming out of the Lord's body, at one of the disillusions, then you're going to take up the same activity that was there when you stopped. Right? Before you went to sleep or before you merged. That's the principle. Right? That's the point. So, a side point is the creation and destruction. Because the material world has been created by the Lord not to be just destroyed and created. It's been created to continue the fulfilling the living entity's desire to be separate from him. Does that make sense? That principle then always applies. Does that make sense? So we'll see. We go to sleep in the morning. When we wake up, we're going to continue doing what we did the day before. Right? When there's disillusion, when it opens again, when it's recreated, we're going to take up where we left off. Whatever you were doing, it's going to be the same. Never think that it's something unique and special. Right? This is generally what we think. My situation is special, or my love is special, or it's always mine is special. Right? This is ego. It makes us feel good. It gives us an identity, gives us a purpose, gives us a need, gives us, whatever we want. But it's the same old chewing the chewed. It's always the same. Right? Narad Muni in the last creation is talking about what it looked like. And his definition is the same as what's going on now. Right? And Mano, when he describes the creation, he says the Lord recreates it exactly as it's described in the Veda. So every creation is the same, every living entity is the same, every species of life is the same. It means the dogs anywhere in the world now, in any of the ages, in any of the days of Brahma, in any of the creations, are all the same. They're all the same dogs. Right? No, there's no difference. It's not that, you know, the dogs in America bark and in China they don't. You know, they all bark. And you go to the heavenly planets, they bark. You go to the next universe, they bark. You know, it's all the same. That's the way the Veda says they are. That's the way they are created. So this principle. Then we'll see it's the same. Another one that's also very interesting is I join the movement of Krishna consciousness, right? You're awake. Then, now this is in the inverse. Then if I leave the movement, I figure I'm going to go out with the same maturity, intellectual development, same refinement, same everything. And then when I go back to material life, I'm going to continue in the position I'm in. No, you just go right back to where you were. Right? You came in pumping petrol? When you go out, you'll be pumping petrol. That's the way it works. Like that. I mean, you think about it. All the, you know, prominent luminaries, when they leave, they go back to whatever they were before. They were from the street, they're back on the street. They were from a nice background, they go back to that background. So this is a principle. But that's in reverse. That you're asleep, when you wake up, when you go back to sleep, you do the same stuff, you know. It's like every night and when you go to sleep, you know, you sleep in the same way, put your pillow in the same way, put your blanket, you do the same things. Right? So in the same way. Does this make some sense? So this is what we have to catch, is these are, example is given. An example, you could give any number of examples. Right? Here Prabhupada gives the example of the tree, the banyan tree. Because that's given because it's so, the contrast is so great. The banyan seed is so small, and the banyan tree is the biggest of trees. So therefore, it's a very dynamic example, right? And one banyan tree produces huge amounts of seeds, and therefore huge amounts of trees. So it's a very good example. But it can be applied to any other trees, any other bushes, anything that grows from a seed. And even if it doesn't grow from a seed, you take a cutting, you take a this, whatever it is, it's the same principle. Right? So some example must be given. So here, it's very nicely worked in here. And this is the ladies discussing it. Right? It's not that they're great philosophers. It means they've heard the philosophy, they know the philosophy. They're still going to, their discussion of this, it says this is more, this talk was more attractive than the hymns of the Vedas. So the hymns of the Vedas, we notice in here, more times the ladies and their interaction comes up in the discussion than the great sages and other things. So it'll be the Lord's associates, the ladies, and occasionally the big intellectuals and all that will be mentioned. Because when they mention it, it's just philosophy. For the ladies here, it's creation, because they have children, then he's manifesting, they're dying, everything's coming. They'll see it in this personal way, the interaction with the Lord. Does that make sense? So it's philosophy, but they will see the culture of it. So therefore, then it has a taste for them. That's the point, is that everyone's going to discuss the same thing, but from their position. And they're going to be satisfied. Right? This is how, if everyone's going to be the same, then we have, this is impersonalism. No, personalism means everyone's different. Right? But there are individual needs. But there's difference, but there's a commonality, otherwise there's no social function. But there's individual. So because of that, that's what makes it nice. Right? But just imagine, okay, means men it's not much of a problem because their individuality is in a different place. You know, their individual is how they think, how they do, how that. But they can all the men can be dressed in the same white dhoti, same white kurta, they can all sit down and eat the same food, sleep in the same place, have all the same mats, same everything, no problem, because their individuality is established with something else other than accessories. Right? Their individuality has nothing to do with that. Sometimes they may get into it, but generally that's if they're involved with women, then they add in a touch of the difference in, accessories. Like that. For the ladies, then it's the accessory that can't be the same. Could you imagine? You know, you come into this room, and when you come in the room, every woman in the place has the same sari on. She's wearing it in the same way. You know, she's sitting in the same way, doing everything in the same way. Talk to them. You know, you all get up and leave, right? It's just the way it would work. So that's the whole point, is that it's everyone has their way of being individual. With men, you say, yeah, and so I did that. Yeah, I thought of that also. You know, and I did that. Yeah, I did that also. When it, you know, that's where they're individual. You know, they can't know, hey, I'm also. You know, why is it just your, you know? So there's always a thing, but it's different. So here, the women are discussing the philosophy, but it's not dry philosophy. Right? It's not just academic. So even though they may or may not hear, they're seeing the Lord, so that we don't have to worry about realization here. But even for other ladies to talk, then it's based on the principles of relationships, how they function, how they, you know, because that's the whole thing. You create families, expand families, that's the meaning. Street, to expand. So here, he creates, he destroys, he does this, he does that. And it's all seen in this way. So then it becomes a nice thing to discuss. It's not a dry, boring thing. So we see as the Lord is wonderful. So that's the, it's like the prayers were offered by the benedictions were being given to Krishna by the Brahmins. So some are thinking this is inappropriate. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How you can give him benediction? And others are saying, no, this is appropriate because he's taking the form of a human being and therefore you can give benediction. It's the pastime. Besides, he is all auspicious, so whatever you say, it applies anyway. But the main point is it connected to him. That's the common principle. They're talking about him. And some are thinking it's appropriate, some are not. Whatever it is, but it's all connected with him. So therefore it's all good. That's the point. It's connected to Krishna, it's good. That's the principle. So then in here we see is that we have to be very, very aware that we are doing whatever we're doing now. Right? This is in relationship to this point of the suptotita nyaya. We're going to wake up and do whatever we're doing. In other words, what we're doing this lifetime is what we've been doing previous lifetimes. And what we're doing now is only a manifestation of the result of what we've done in previous lives. Right? It means you have at every moment the free will to choose what you're going to do with it, but that you have it and the situations that you come into, that's from previous. Now it's up to you to decide, do we want to continue what we've done in previous lives, or are we going to change that and get out of then we go back into the transcendental supto, what is it? Supto titanyaya, that we were in the spiritual world, we were awake, but we chose to go asleep. So now we can wake up again and take up that service in the spiritual world. But that's a conscious thing. Right? So wherever we're at now, we can't identify with it that we're comfortable with it and that this is us. No, we can identify that this is what I have to work with. Right? Like if you walk out of here and there's a bicycle there, if you don't identify it's a bicycle, right, and it's not air, then you're going to bump into it and it's going to be a problem. Or if you want to use it as transport, unless you identify it's a bicycle, it will be very hard to use it. If you think it's a pair of, you know, roller blades, it will be very hard to use. You know, or if you think it's a car, it'll also be hopeless. So you have to identify it, but it doesn't mean it's us. So you have to identify the gross and subtle body, know what it is, then you can use it in Krishna's service. It doesn't have to be us to be identified. And it doesn't have to be us to be used. Right. So that is the principle, is that we want to wake up, so we wake up, see what's there, then get back to what we should be doing in our natural awoken state, what is the natural position before we fell asleep here in the material world. Any questions in these comments? Or?
When you tell... you make now you have one life and you make the same than you make the another life, no? The previous life. My question is, when the children, the devoted children, coming like from the born, from when they born, they coming, they become maybe devotees. Perhaps you not teach nothing. You teach something, but they know more than you. So for example, Vala know more than me. You know more than me. And that my question is because he was devoting in his previous life, no?
Well, the question is that because he's a devotee in the previous life?
Yes.
Okay.
Because he not finished his duty. He can meet another time because he not finished his duty.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the question is, we're talking about waking up from last life and continuing where we left off. So that brings up a question. Therefore, how is it that, is that the reason that the children who are born in the families of devotees advance quicker, no more than the first generation or their own parents? And so then, how is that? So that's basically the principle, is that those who are born in devotee families were devotees previously. Right? First generation, there may be contact. Generally, that's contact with devotional service. So it's called Agyata Sukriti. So much devotional service has been performed, but not enough that we seriously took up the association of devotees. Then in this life, by the association of devotees, we get that fortune. Then that Agyata Sukriti increases to the point of where faith arises, and we surrender, and then we take up the process. But those who are born in devotee families, they were devotees, actual conscious devotees in the previous life. So, therefore, their focus is generally better, whatever it is. Now, depending upon their previous life, they may be more or less devotionally inclined, or where their strengths and weaknesses are. You'll find that the first generation has a very broad, what they call plethora of anartas. Right? It's like unlimited kind of anartas. Some are prominent, but it's always the edges of those anartas. It's not clear. They become blurred by so many side anartas. So there's so many details of a particular anarta. But for those who are born in devotee families, then they have anartas. That's why they're born again. You know, the doubt was, is therefore, did they stop not finish their duties? That's the point. They didn't finish, so they're born again. But so their anartas, so much of the fine detail has been removed by the process of devotional service, but the anarta, enough anarta is there to get them to be born again. So then their focus on that anarta may be greater than the focus of a first generation, because the first generation is you know, what do you call it? Not vyavasayatmika. It's like that. They have the mind is, you know, blurred by so many desires, they can't focus on any one. You only get a result if you focus on one. You know, like the biggest, like sometimes we see in the material world, people are very successful. So we'll say, oh, see, good person. But actually, the materialist means he's the biggest demon, because he has so much faith in the activity and the result he'll get from a particular activity that he is endeavoring for. Well, the common person doesn't have that faith. Therefore, they can't get that result. Because it could be this, but then it could be that, and maybe I should do this, maybe I should do that. But the, you know, outstanding materialist focus, I do this, I get this result, I will enjoy. Right? And generally the ability to do that is from piety, from previous life. So they have the piety to focus, and they're more focused. So focus is important. So they're focused on fewer anartas, or on fewer, you know, points in their devotional life. They know, I want to chant, or I want to do this or that. Well, sometimes devotees is, you know, one day it's they're doing chatamas, or they're doing this prata or that prata, and the next day they're doing the opposite. And, you know, so their devotional sadhana, what is important to them is constantly changing. You know, one day it's shaligram worship, next day it's doing yagyas, the next day it's chanting prayers, the next day it's doing dandabad parigrams, the next day it's, and it's keep changing and changing. But if you, the kids, as if they're into something spiritual, generally it's a few things and they're focused on it. So both, the spiritual and the material, it'll be less and more focused. So naturally, then, if they apply themselves in Krishna consciousness, very quickly they advance. Therefore, Prabhupada said, one of these kids is worth 10 sannyasis, because a sannyasi is coming from, it means the first generation, because they're coming from a background where there's a lot of distraction. So their focus is great. They're the ones that, at that time, were leading the movement. Right? And so then, that was very great. So, if a second generation applied themselves, they could get 10 times the result. If they don't apply themselves, then they're just another face in the crowd. As a Guru Kripa, I'm proud to tell Guru Kripa. He was mentioning about the sannyasi, and then he was saying, there's so many people out there involved in materialism. And he says, yes, and if somebody engages like that, they're just another face in the crowd, nothing special. Second generation, the smoke stop, gets on with the girls. They're no different than every other living entity and every dog and every bug. Right? I mean, the ants and the bees fall into the honey and sugar because they're intoxicated. No big deal. Like that. You know? In fact, it's easier. They don't have to go out and spend money to buy the stuff. Right? It comes to them free. Like that. So they're even better. Right? So this is the thing, is that comment is if they apply themselves in Krishna consciousness, the results will be 10 times greater. But if they don't, then neither the parents nor the kids should think themselves something special. They're just another face in the crowd. Right? So it always has to remember, a knife cuts both ways. Something that's common is nothing special, nothing bad. Something that's special can also be really bad. Right? So that's the thing. It always works like that. It's not a, yeah, it's just like you see, Chittaketu. 10 million wives. And then in a moment, done, completely detached from all of that. So these opposites many times are there. So that's there. Something very great is there. So then it should be seen as that the principle is that they're waking up to, they'll wake up to what's there if we give them. That's what Prabhupada says, that is what they've come for, that's what they have to be given. If they're given something else, then the parent has not performed their duty as a parent. Not as a human parent. Animal parent, yes. The dogs give eating, sleeping, mating, defending to their kids, and they make them into a great dog. Tigresses make their children into great, you know, tigers and tigresses, you know, like that. They're able to do that. So, but if that's all you've given, then there's no credit. Everybody else does it. But if you give them Krishna consciousness, what they're born for, then you can say, yes, I've done my duty as a human being. Because human being starts with spiritual life. Like that. So that's a important thing. So it goes both ways. Always remember, it's not one-sided. That's the problem with the Western culture. You want all the enjoyment without the responsibility. Right? But the Vedic culture is, you take responsibility first, then you'll get enjoyment. First the austerity, then the result. But the modern is, buy now, you know, get it now, pay later, right? You get it on credit. It's not even yours, and you're enjoying it. So, all right. But that's the illusion. So the Vedic is you have it, you can therefore get the benefit of it, but you have a duty to perform. The responsibility must be there. You're not doing the duty, then that's why you're not getting the enjoyment, right? The kid's not at home because they're out with their friends, you know, smoking dope and doing whatever. And the parent is in anxiety. Why? Because you didn't do the austerity that you're supposed to give them Krishna consciousness. Therefore, you don't have them. It's a science. It's not sentiment. It's a hard, cold science. Your sentiment is part of the science. Right? That's how it works. It doesn't work in another way. We can think what we like. It doesn't work that way. We can wish it whatever we like. It doesn't work that way. It works the way Krishna created it. You give them, they have. It's the same for anybody. You give it to the new bhaktas, they turn out nice. You don't give it, they don't get it. You know, you put your time into cooking and preparation, it comes out nice. You don't put the time, it doesn't turn out nice. You know, you spend the time putting on your clothes nicely, you look nice. You don't spend the time, you don't look nice. Right? It's a principle. That's what we're talking about here is one principle. This is a principle. You put in the austerity, you get the result. So whatever result you're looking at, work back from there and figure out, well, what did you do to get it? Right? It's not someone else's fault. Right? This justice thing works very good. But it doesn't actually answer your problem. The problem is you have a result based on what you perform. Right? So then in this way, then the children then are a result of we've taken up Krishna consciousness, we want to, you know, have children in Krishna consciousness, because of that, taking that responsibility, that austerity, then you get children that are from a Krishna conscious background. Now, how much you've put into it, then that kind of child you get back. You think of Krishna at the time of conception, you get more Krishna conscious. You don't think of Krishna at the time of conception, you get less Krishna conscious. Right? There are devotees who aren't very Krishna conscious. There are devotees who are into sense gratification. So if that's your mood, you can get them. They're there. Any community has 4-reg devotees, 3-reg devotees, 2-reg devotees. You know, they all have them. So that's what you decide. Which one do you want? So like that, then, you get... Want to say something?
Yesterday I came across the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita where the elders were mentioned, you know, like in the need of the elders to... Mm-hmm. take care of the younger generation, mm-hmm. even if the younger generation is very qualified, that mm-hmm. still without the elders, they tend mm-hmm. to go astray, mm-hmm. and therefore they must learn to respect the elders. Mm-hmm. So, kind of like...
But how do you get the balance?
Yeah, I felt that element there needed
to
be highlighted.
Yeah, okay, that's a very good point. Because this is the... When you discuss, sometimes to make one point, then maybe another point will be underemphasized or get compromised. So here he's making the point is that in the Gita, Arjuna's bringing out the point of the elders. Without the elders, society doesn't go on. So that's the point is, without, as we were saying it, but in the inverse, is that it's only because the parents are Krishna conscious and training the children and the senior members of the community are doing their services, setting example, inspiring, preaching. Therefore, then the kids have a chance to grow up properly. So without the elders, you don't have a community. The main thing is the difficulty is now is there's very few, you know, on the material platform, very few grandparents. All we have is parents. Parents are attached, so therefore, many times their vision is clouded like that. So they see it according to their own needs and all that. Just like, you see, most people, they get married for themselves. They have children for themselves. They deal with the kids for themselves. The child is secondary. The grandparents, it's different. It's not their children. So the senior members of the community, the sannyasis, it's not their children. You know, the leading preachers, it's not their children. The grandparents, it's not their children. So they can look at it in a detached way. Right? The parent is pulling out their hair, trying to get the child to understand what to do, and they never do it right, and I told them a million times. The grandparent sits down, and in 5 minutes, the kid's doing it. Why? Because the grandparent... You do it, it's good for you. You don't do it, you're the one who suffers. I'm not going to suffer. I got my life. I'm fine. You know? So that's the difference. The parents, it's, oh, he has to do it. It's part of, you know, they just see it so much as part of them that you don't need to train. Very, very common, I see. It's that it goes both ways, between the boys and the girls and between the parents and the children. Because you like the person, therefore you figure everything's fine without discussion. And so then later on, then the boy and girl figure out, hey, we're so different, what happened? Or you have the parent and the child, because it's their child, automatically they like what I like, will do what I like, just because of attachment, right? That's the animal birth, its main right of authority is attachment. Right? Because you're attached, therefore you see eating, sleeping, mating, defending is going on nicely. Human life means a different responsibility. Because you're Krishna conscious, because you're dutiful, that therefore then you can give them that. that make sense? The parent's attachment to the child will ensure nice material life. The spiritual life comes from attachment to Krishna. Because you attach to the child, you want the best for them, you give them Krishna consciousness. Right? So, therefore, the grandparents then are so ideal in this society because they know, they've been through it, they've raised the kids, they've done all the things, they've tried all the techniques, and they know what works and what doesn't. Of course, the new parent, because of their attachment, they always know better. You know, that's always the thing. And the grandparents don't care because, you know, you're the one that's going to suffer. You know, you do the wrong thing, you as a parent are going to suffer. So therefore, the grandparents, like, you want to take it? Great. If you don't want to take it, what do I care? I got my job, I got my service. You know? And so therefore, they're independent. So that's the real key is, independence is what creates culture. We want independence, but what is that independence? That it means independence from attachment. Right? So detachment is what is seen as higher within the human social scale. The Brahmins are considered higher than the Shudras because of the amount of detachment. Sannyasis are considered better because of the detachment. Because detachment is what makes things work in this world. Attachment is inspirational to get you to do it, but attachment never makes anything work right. Right? Like you see, someone's so attached to trying to apply it, it always goes wrong. And you just tell, hey, move aside, it'll do it. So someone who's detached makes it work. That's a key. An unknown key, but it's the key. So here is because the elders are more detached because of their practices in Krishna consciousness, their philosophy, their experience. Therefore, without them, then the rest of society can't, the other two generations won't function as well. Kids don't know what they're doing. They have the potential, but don't know. Right? The parents have a good idea, but because of attachment, sometimes it's clouded and hard to operate. But the grandparents have already been through it, and they know what worked and what didn't. And since it's not their child, they don't mind saying, this works and it doesn't. You take it, you don't take it. They don't care. I mean, they're out of here anyway in a few years. So it's like, if you don't care, what do they care? You know, they don't have, they're not under the illusion they're going to live forever and all these things. They know it's like, you know, some, one foot on a banana peel and the other foot in the grave. Somebody put it, you know. It's a matter of time. And they know it, so it's like, you know, they don't care. You take it, great. If you don't, it's not going to inhibit their identity or their worth or need in life because their need is independent. So it's a very good point, is that as we see that the more the devotees recognize the importance of the senior devotees and those with experience, the better will function both on a spiritual, as a spiritual society, and the better even our material facilities and workings will work like that. It's a very, very important point. Is that thing not enough? Uncompromised.
Yes. In Krishna consciousness, we're trained to see, try to see mercy in all the activities, in the suffering and the happiness.
See mercy in
Krishna, in happiness and suffering, like an absolute vision. Simultaneously, you have to be afraid of samsara and surrender to Krishna. So how to balance that? Because one's gift of loyalty, one's this absolute vision.
Okay, so then the point is that one is seeing, one should see in the from the transcendental platform. That's the proper vision. So then from this comes up the vision that we would see it, then application, or we would see it in connection with Krishna, whatever's happening. Oh, if something goes wrong, it's Krishna's mercy, or if something goes right, it's Krishna's mercy. At the same time as then we're told to be afraid of the material world. Right? And in being afraid of the material world, then it appears we're not looking at it from the absolute platform. We're not looking at it with spiritual vision. Right? So, how to reconcile these? So the point is one has to be able to bring it into the perspective is that we're not afraid of Krishna. That's why we're seeing it as Krishna's mercy. But we're afraid of Maya. That was Prahlad's point. All the demigods, Nrisimhadeva asked, you're not afraid of me? Because all the demigods, everybody, even Lakshmi is afraid. They don't know. Because fear means you don't know the relationship. But Prahlad knows the relationship. So he's not afraid. But he says, I'm afraid of Maya, because Maya makes me forget you. So we're afraid of that. So both of them, it's common, is that you're seeing a relationship to Krishna. So it's a relationship to Krishna, then it's transcendental. But to become involved in samsara means you have to forget Krishna. So we're afraid of that. We're not afraid of the reactions of samsara by our previous activities, because we know that with the reactions that come, that's the Lord's grace, so that we are, remember, we're in the material world, we get purified, all that. But we're afraid of coming under the influence of it, right? A devotee, it's like the fan is pulled out, so it's not creating more. It's just what's going on from previous. So the situations that are coming now that may give us trouble or facilities or whatever, that's from before, but now we're dealing with it without creating more. That's called okarma. Karma, akarma. Karma meaning pious activities, akarma meaning impious, and okarma meaning no karma. Right? Because if you perform an activity without the influence of the modes, it can't create karma. Activity performed with the modes makes karma, but activity without the modes, there's no karma. So samsara means you're performing the activity of the with the modes, so that the devotee is afraid of. Does that make some sense? So therefore, the absolute, you have to expand it to see it also there. The samsara you're seeing, observing it from the absolute platform. Is that okay?
Nijava Dharma, there's a mentioning about the origin of living entity.
Jiva Dharma is mentioning the origin.
Origin. And some people, obviously, there's an argument about that point, that some people say that, they mention Jiva Dharma, that living entities came from Mahavishnu. It's born there, and they came from there. Mm-hmm. But does it actually have a connection with this creation? During the creation, they come only from there, or actually they created over there originally? Or how it should be understood.
Okay. So we brought out the point of the Suptotika Nyaya, and we use it in the inverse to saying that we're awake in the spiritual world, then we go to sleep, and then we wake again, then we're going to do the same things we did in the spiritual world. So then that raises a doubt on, well then, but then if we're appearing from Mahavishnu, we're devotees going to Vrindavan, then how do we... It seems that it's not right. There has to be something. We would have had to have come from Vrindavan, or, you know, so many things come up like that. So then it becomes doubtful how that would function. So then, the principle then is that one has to look at is, what do the acharyas say about this topic? Prabhupada said, don't worry about it. Ramanujacharya forbade his students to discuss it. Madhvacharya likewise. So therefore we can understand from the absolute platform it's not an important discussion. Absolutely not an important discussion. So using the principle that Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses in the Krishna Samhita, you say something that doesn't compromise your philosophy, but it presents it in a hidden way that it will be taken by the hearer of the answer to be the opposite. Right? Example is in the Bhagavad. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is speaking, giving this lecture to a bunch of Bengali intellectuals and British intellectuals. So now they don't want to hear about the Vedic literature because it has in it so many things that they consider just mythical. You know, it talks about hells and this and that. So he opens by saying that the hell described in the, you know, the literature, Vedic literature, is imagination. Right? So now the materialists will take imagination means it doesn't exist, it was just bogus, it's not factual. But if you actually look at it, when you're in hell, there it's made of subtle matter, and you are there in your subtle body. There's no gross body. So if you say something is imaginary, where is it happening? In the mind. So the mind is a real substance, but it's on the mental platform. So therefore, for us, so we know that Bhaktivinoda Thakur hasn't contradicted our philosophy at all. He's just spoken it in such a way that for the devotee, it's hidden the actual truth, but for the karmi, it distracts him from what is annoying him, that he won't listen to the absolute truth. If they're not going to listen to the conclusions of Bhagavad Dharma because they're all caught up about, you know, people being 30 foot tall and living for 100,000 years, and all, then we just say something that distracts them from that and gets them to the point. So therefore, the acharyas, one, it's not to get into, or they use a distraction. You know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati talks, say you fell from Brahman. But everything is Brahman. This is Brahman. On the absolute platform. You know? And when you come into the material world, when Mahavishnu breathes out, he glances into the pradhan. That becomes Mahatattva. Now, Mahatattva is considered Vasudeva Sattva. You are on the transcendental platform. You are liberated. Right? But you still have material desire, because a liberated soul has still got material desire. Right? Then Brahma creates, and then you fall out of that state into going back to, you wake up, you know, materially, and then you take up where you left off. So what he said is not wrong, and it stops all conversation. If you say, we fell from Brahman, there's not one more question. I've seen it a million times. Because once you say Brahman, oh, okay, that makes sense to the mundane mind, and so answers all questions. But if you talk about transcendence and how coming out of transcendence and the training from transcendence to the material, it doesn't make sense because it's on the transcendental platform, which we're not. So then unlimited questions go on and on and on and on. Therefore, they say don't discuss it because you can't understand it. Like the three-year-old trying to understand the marriage and the relationship between the father and the mother and why there's a kid and the emotion and all involved. Can they ever understand it? No chance. Come and ask when you're 12. Then there's a possibility. But at 3 and 8, you'll never understand. So the same way, until you're liberated, it doesn't really make any sense. You can't fully understand it. You know. So therefore, it's just dropped. So the point is at which point you can understand, because what it is, what is the question? Did I come from Mahavishnu? What is that question? It's a time of place and space and time, which means material. It's not a spiritual question. The devotee thinks I'm being very spiritual, trying to understand, did I manifest from Mahavishnu or from Balaram or from, you know, Radha, this or that, or for that, from that rock over there. But all of those are material questions of the material intelligence. Nothing spiritual about it. And because there's been a point that's not been authorized to discuss, it's not a spiritual topic anyway. Because on what authority is it being discussed? Saying, so where's the spirit? So that's the point, is that we say it has to be that time and place. But we've always existed. There's no time when we didn't exist. When we manifest or are not manifest, that's another question. But that's on the eternal platform. So Mahavishnu, everybody's coming out. If you're here in the material world, you know, that's where you came from. Because he breathes out. You know, and they're talking there. They don't bother talking about when you come out of Kiradaksha Vishnu at the end of the day of Brahma. They're not, don't even bother with that one. You know, so there, you came out of there, it gives a time and place that you could be satisfied. Or Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, Brahman, it gives the Mahatattva, which is a time and place that you can identify. And then from there. So these two answers have been given. Because the point is how are you going to understand? Right. First understand that Gokul and Goloka are non-different. The Prakrita and Aprakrita are non-different. You understand that, you understand your answer. The answer is not where it came from. The answer is what is transcendental, what's not. What is Tathasta Shakti? Right? That's been explained. Tathasta Shakti is the place in the same Jiva Dharma. Jiva Dharma, I mean, Tathasta Shakti is that energy where spiritual and material are overlaid on top of each other in the same place at the same time, and they're functioning together. That's Tathasta. And the reason this question can't be answered, where we come from, because then where does lust come from if we came from the spiritual world? So you have lust, which is material, you have spiritual, which is that. But the point is we're not spiritual, we're not material, we're tatastha. Where the two function at once. So the point is that the question comes up because the questioner does not understand what is tatastha shakti. So they don't have their sambandha jnana down. And they don't understand that the Gokul and Golok are the same. Because when you say, I fell from the spiritual, it always has to be Golok. You know, why can't it be Gokul? Right? All our scriptures are only talking Gokul. I think only Brihad Bhagavatamrita gives us some glimpse into Golok. What's the slight difference in the pastimes there than here? All other books are all Gokul. All of them. Every last one. Because it's because of the combination of the tatastha shakti, we can relate to it. Because we're on the tatastha platform, or on the material platform. When we come to the absolute platform, means we're in the fire of the internal potency, then we'll understand it from that platform. But until then, therefore all the examples are given on this plane, and in connection with spiritual on this plane, where the spirit has come here and is manifest here. So, therefore, by principle, there's no need to answer it, because the answer is somewhere else. We're looking, did I come from Mahavishnu, Balaram? That's not where your answer lies. The answer lies in understanding who you are, as tatastha shakti. You know? So that's where it is. Because the other one, you'll never get the answer. You can go on speculating, you'll never understand. Because if you're asking the question, and Prabhupada's already explained it, but if you don't understand it, means you don't understand it. It's one of those, you either understand it or you don't. There's no in between. You know, like that. So it's just, therefore it's not a topic to discuss. Because what does it matter? If you get the result, what does it matter if I got the Mahaprasad right off the deity's plate, or I got it after they transferred the deity's plate in the, you know, the pujari room, or I got it when they brought it out onto the altar, or I got it from another devotee who brought it to me in a plastic bag. What does it matter? It's Mahaprasad. You got Mahaprasad. You get spiritual benefit. What does it matter where it came from? But there's the material concept that if I got it right off the deity's plate, you know, then it's better Mahaprasad than if I got it out of the plastic bag from the hand of the Pope. That's the material concept. Therefore, you can't answer this question. Because what does it matter? We came from Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu is the Lord of the tatastha shakti. Because material and spiritual are in the same place at the same time. So what's the problem if that's who we are? But we're trying to project ourselves as something we're not. We are not internal potency. So it doesn't matter if we didn't manifest from the internal potency. We come from the chit potency anyway. Because even if it's Mahavishnu, he has chit potency. So we come from, you know, wherever, it doesn't matter. You know. That's the thing. We also see the difference that Mahavishnu and Krishna are different. Lord Chaitanya didn't seem to see that difference. Right? In the Lord's pastimes, when they performed the drama at Lord Chaitanya's house, or Srinivasacharya's house, Srinivas Thakur's house, Lord Chaitanya played Radharani, and Advaitacharya played Krishna. When they did not Dhanakali. Yeah, it's basically, it's like a Dhanakali pastime. Where they come and they're picking flowers, and Krishna's coming and say, this is my forest, these are my flowers, what are you doing picking them? So Lord Chaitanya played Radharani, and Advaitacharya played Krishna. So Krishna, he doesn't see the difference. It's just like, does the man see the difference between himself sitting at home with his family, or when he's gone to work and he's sitting at the high court bench? You know, he sees himself as the same. But he's going to reciprocate differently because of the situation. So for Krishna, it's the same him. Just he only manifests that much because that's all the people interact with him. So the problem is we're trying to view absolute from a spirit material vision. Therefore we get confused. Therefore, even though Prabhupada answered the question, and said, don't worry about it. And there's been research done into it, and answers have been given based on even that. Still, the question goes on, because our material consciousness is not satisfied, and worst of all, our ego is not satisfied, because I'm not about to be manifest in Mahavishnu when I'm a, you know, gopi in Vrindavan. It's just, that's the bottom line. That's the real reason. It's just, I can't accept that, you know. So what does it matter? If you get there, what do you care where you came from, you know? You know, we all come to the temple. What does it matter? I came from the Grihastha area, from the Brahmacharya ashram, from the Gurukul here, from the Goshala over there. Or I live outside and I came in the front gate. Well, he came from the front gate. You know, you know, it's a big deal. Who cares?
One more question related to this one is, what is actually the purpose of the soul coming from the spiritual world?
What is the purpose of the soul coming from the spiritual
world?
Was it
because to enhance the relationship? Because before it's together with Krishna, but then it's just to come back and to increase the relationship, or what was the purpose?
Okay, so then the doubt, now here's another thing comes out. Okay, now we've come into the material world. Now we don't want to be the idiots. Right? Yeah. So it's got to be that there's some great benefit to God and mankind that we have come to the material world. Right? So, you know, it can't be a step down, because we're, you know, intelligent, qualified, and all that. So then the point comes up is that, no, there's absolutely no purpose in us coming to the material world. It's just a waste of time. But, because Krishna is all good, right, like that, then even us coming to the material world, still, we resituate ourselves back in his service. So now we've made that commitment. Point is to make that commitment to serving Krishna. So 9 out of 10 jivas make that commitment and, you know, never leave the transcendental platform. 1 out of 10, you know, are foolish enough to come here. So then they come here, and then, but the benefit is they can attain to the same position that those who never made, the nitya siddhas. Then by coming there, because then you are eternally on that platform, then you're also nitya siddha. So there's no difference. The only difference is time. That's all. But even that time is very minimal compared to the spiritual world, because it's said, you know, just as long as Mahavishnu breathes out, that's how long the universe works. So it takes 3/4 of a second for the Lord to breathe out and in. So it's 1/2 of 3/4. You know? Right, so 3/4, that means 3 and 4. So you make 6 and 8. So 3/8 of a second. That's how long this material world works. So even say you're in this material world for 100 lifetimes of Brahma, you know, that's 100 times 3/8 of a second. You know, it's about enough time for someone to sneeze and wipe their nose, you know. So it's not a long time. But because the transcendental platform, the rasa is so intense that even a moment not happening creates anxiety for Krishna. You know, so therefore we don't want to keep them waiting. Is that okay? So, therefore, we should also drop that thing of false ego that, you know, we've done some great benefit to mankind by coming here. It's a step up, right? See, that's the weakness of saying we fell from Brahman, because at least here you're dealing with activity and goal and relationship. So it's a better position. That's what Prabhupada said, we can't have fallen from Brahman, because Brahman's already a fallen position. For the jiva to be in Brahman means he's fallen. Because Brahman is Sat, while the living entity is Brahman is Satchitananda. So the soul is greater Brahman, a superior Brahman than the Brahmajyoti. So it's already a fallen position. Therefore, that can't be the origin. That can be closer that we know. Like, how did he get in here? Oh, he came through that door. You know, like we ask, where did this mosquito come from? I said, oh, he came in the window. That's all we need to know. Do we need to know exactly which pond out there he came from and like that? No. You know, we need to know where he got in, because we can close that window. So the same thing is, how did we get in here? Oh, Mahavishnu or Brahman or this. Because that's the thing. Oh, you're on the trend that you fell from that platform. You know, that's what's useful. Other than that, what are you going to do with it? Unless you're going to go to the root and get rid of them. But otherwise to know that, oh yes, see over here. No, no, not that one. That was the other mosquito that bit you the night before. They came from 1 centimeter over. That's where that mosquito came from. It's not important. So we have to always be careful that our ego is not getting in the way. It's generally, it's one of our major stumbling blocks, our ego. And because of this, then the mind accepts and rejects improperly. And the intelligence, even though it may give very nice discriminatory powers, we don't apply it because our identity is different. So we see as most anything that are issues, it's all issue means it's based on identity. False ego, if it's an issue, there's false ego involved. If it's not an issue, then there's no false ego. That's why you see that the sages and all that can deal so peacefully with even issues, because issues one-sided. It's not on their side. Right? Yudhishthir, it's not an issue, because he has no ego. For Duryodhana, it's an issue, because he has an ego. Does that make sense? So, we see that false egos created these particular, you know, unanswerable issues, even though they've already been answered so many times. Okay, so just thinking. Okay, last question, and then we'll finish.
Is there any difference between Tatastha Shakti, which returns the spiritual world, and Shakti, which are always there?
Is there any difference between the Shaktis of the spiritual world and the Tathasta Shaktis of the spiritual world? So then the point comes is that we're saying that we're going to come to the transcendental platform, so then we are Nitya Siddha. And there's no difference between a Jiva who was Nitya Bhada became Nitya Siddha and a Jiva who was always Nitya Siddha. So is there a difference, then the question comes up, is there a difference between that Nityasiddha Jiva and the internal potency? So then there's a difference by tattva, but as far as practicality and application, there's none. Therefore, it's so important that we understand the example of the definition of absolute. Right? When Prabhupada gives the definition of absolute, he always uses the same example of iron and fire. Because then the iron is non-different than the fire. So that's us. When we're in the fire of devotional service, we act non-different from the internal potency. But you could say there is a difference, technically, between, by tattva, between hot iron and fire. But as far as practical application, there's no difference. Because we are not internal potency, we're jivas. But we're in the fire. You know. So we also have to be careful here of ego. That, well, I don't want to be, I want to be, but that's what we are. Krishna is Krishna, internal potency is internal potency, we're jivas. Shiva tattva, Shiva tattva, Maya is Maya. These are eternal principles, that's the way they are. So, if we come under the potency, then we're imbued with that internal chit potency, so we're as good as. That's why we are always servants of the internal potency. We are never directly connected to Krishna. We always connect to Krishna through his internal potency. Like that. There's no such thing as the jiva's direct relationship with Krishna. Means we're always related to Krishna through the internal potency. Otherwise, how do you get jiva? Right? You have internal potency, which is directly touching Krishna. Right? You have the external potency, which is the shadow of the internal potency. And then you have the jiva, which is the sandhi between the two. Right? So our connection to Krishna is through the internal potency. That's just the way it's engineered. Make sense? So if that's understood and accepted, then we're happy. there was a, I think I mentioned this before, there was a poll taken in America, a study done on people who are happy. And the only people that were happy were people who accepted or were comfortable with their particular identity. They were happy. So they were comfortable. Yes, I'm just a common, you know, lower middle class American, you know, and I do this and I do that. And they're comfortable. They were happy because what they had, they could enjoy. But the person who was not comfortable with their identity, it didn't matter how much they had, they were still unhappy. So as soon as we accept, I am Jiva, and this is my position, I am serving in the internal potency, and, you know, the sooner I take that up, and I am servant of the servant, like this, then the sooner I'm going to be happy. So just, that's what we are. You know, it's just like the parents, they come and they say things for Krishna. The cows give milk for Krishna, right? The kalpavriksha trees, they give fruit and other things and flowers. Like that, Govardhan gives like lots of minerals and fresh cool water and grasses for the cow. Everybody has what they give, right? Mother Yashoda is happy feeding Krishna, bathing Krishna. She's not upset. Why I'm not out? How come I can't go on the rasa dance? Right. So that's the whole point: is if we're comfortable with who we are, then we're happy. So if we're comfortable, yes, I'm a jiva. And, you know, I'm an idiot, I came here, so let's, you know, get it together and go back and do what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to be helping the internal potency serve Krishna. That's what we're supposed to do. Internal potency serving Krishna. Right? Rupa Goswami is the leading jiva serving that internal potency. We can serve our guru and the previous acharyas serving him, serving the internal potency, serving Krishna. That's our position. That's what's being offered. Want it? Take it. Don't want it? Then wait around. See if you get a better bargain.
If the ability to serve.
The ability to serve. The ability to serve, is there any difference?
Yeah, capability to serve.
Depends about what you mean by ability to serve.
Is the same amount of
devotional service available? What do you define as devotional service? See, this is the point. You have to define that. Otherwise your mind will catch up and give you anxiety. Is Radharani being in the kunj with Krishna, devotional service, and the gopis looking through the leaves of the kunj and seeing their pastimes, not devotional service? Or you're fanning the, pulling on the rope, or the fan, fanning the divine couple in the kunj, and that's service because it's directly doing, and then leaving that to have to go pick flowers to arrange the next kunj for the next pastime, that's not devotional service. So what do you define as devotional service? They're not the kind of activities, but then what? Energy applied to this. Okay, is the energy applied to this? Okay, so then we're dealing with the energies. So then you have the generator, and it's making electricity. So the electricity is there, and then you have the copper wire. So the energy on its own, or the energy going through the copper wire, is there any difference? No. So then, what would be the difference? We're only imbued with the internal potencies, bhakti shakti. We don't have our own bhakti shakti. We're tatasta. We can choose to be empowered by the bhakti shakti, or we can choose to be empowered by the Maya Shakti. Right? That's our choice. But we are going to be imbued with potency. On our own, we are not the source of that potency. Krishna is the source of devotion, and that devotion is personified as Srimati Radharani. So therefore, all other devotees in the creation are empowered by her. Even in Vaikuntha, that's all from her potency. So let alone us, you know, we're jivas. So then, we have to be empowered. So that being empowered, what's the difference? The energy is the energy. Point is it's a matter of tattva. In rasa, you don't taste the difference.
Once an example that Natashka is like the person who can consume one chapati.
Can consume
And the Shakti is the person who can consume 100 chapati in the dance of devotion. So.
Yeah, it means as far as, okay, so then the point is given that doubt came up is that previously you've mentioned that volume is that the jiva can do a certain amount of potency, has a certain amount of ability, and the internal potency has more. Point is we're limited. Internal potency is unlimited. So Radharani is in every manifestation of him, of Krishna with Radharani. But we will only be in those manifestations that are connected with our acharyas. Right? And that where we're supposed to be. So therefore, it's natural internal potency is greater. Right? When you have Radha and Krishna, the Vallabhas, Radha and Krishna, the Nimbarkas, Radharani is there, we're not. Right? So we're only there where it's that. Therefore, it's natural. What we're doing, what's going on in the particular pastime may be very similar. But we're not worried that it's what we're doing is the same amount as Radharani, because she does it and we experience it. So what's the problem? We have to be careful of the mundane concept, unless I do it myself. In other words, if I'm in control of it, I will enjoy it. Just like the artik is performed. Unless I'm doing the artik, I don't get the benefit. But the Pancharatra says, no, you just watch it, you get the same benefit as the pujari. Prabhupada said, the person who gives the money that does the deity worship gets the same benefit as the person who does the deity worship. You know? So like that, these things are there. Someone is making all arrangements that Sankirtan devotees can go out and distribute books. They're running the godowns, running around, picking them up, making this. They get the same benefit as the person who distributed the book. Right? So that's the point. So Radharani and the others, they perform the pastimes and we assist in them, we get the same benefit. Why we want? If you're independent, yes, you won't get. You only get how much you do. But if you're connected, then whatever they do, you experience. Does that make sense? No, the point is you're saying better we can do more, because you're taking volume as important. This is a weakness in the Western civilization that the Vedic doesn't have so much of a problem with. In the Western civilization up to the basically I think the middle Egyptian empire, then the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas were actually the leaders of society. But near the end, then somehow or another the bourgeois came up, and then success was seen not according to how well it was done in relationship to the scriptures and all that. It was seen in volume and numbers, because that is the concept of the Vaishnava Shudra. Right? So this has become a prominent thing. If there's numbers, then it's better, and if there's less, it's not. So what is it you're going to do more?
More in the terms of quality,
but the point is if the quality is non-different, then what's the problem? I'm saying is the quality is non-different. See, you're trying to overlay something material onto something spiritual. First understand your relationship, how it functions, then you have all these talks. Because these conceptions that you're giving are 100% material. They're not spiritual. The point is you're not Radharani, you're not going to be Radharani, you're not going to be Lalita, you're not going to be Rupa, you're not going to be any of them. They are who they are who you are, and that's the way it is. And you're going to be doing fully what you do, and Krishna's going to be fully satisfied, because that's who you are. Hanuman was coming along lifting mountains and tops of mountain peaks and throwing them into the ocean. And there was a squirrel kicking a little bit of sand into there. And Hanuman told the squirrel, move out of the way, I'm coming through with the mountain. And Ram stopped him and said, I don't see his service of kicking a few grains of sand and your service of throwing mountaintops. You're seeing it on the mundane platform that it's volume. I'm seeing it as quality. Because for Krishna, it's rasa. He couldn't care less about volume. He is everything. You can't be everything. So what are you going to add to his everything? You can add rasa, but you're not going to add volume. Does that make sense? So therefore, your ability, if it's that of a squirrel, you kick in some grains of sand, that's body, mind, and words are fully engaged in Lord's service. Krishna's happy. Radharani is non-different from Krishna, so every aspect of his personality, she has something to match it. She's therefore fully absorbed body, mind, and words in Krishna's service. So on the absolute prapa, it's no difference.
Connected to varieties,
maybe?
Of services. Is it?
No, I don't understand the question.
Varieties of services rendered.
Varieties of services rendered.
To Krishna, like more rasa or more.
Does varieties of service render? Oh, so you're saying the more varieties you do of service, is it going to give more pleasure to Krishna? No, your service done well will give pleasure to Krishna because other service is already done. I can just say for myself, you know, Pankajangri can also say it's an anima. You're doing an abhishek, and you have a few people that's what they're supposed to do. It's a nice abhishek. It goes nicely, it's organized, you do a it goes well, everybody can see. But then when, you know, 100 devotees decide that, you know, I'm also going to get the mercy, and they come crashing in there. Those are the most terrible abhishekes that there are. Because there is no rasa. All you're doing is fighting with the devotees. You keep from banging the didio on the head with the conch shell or pouring the snanium, which goes on the head, on their feet, which is called padyam. And, you know, just making a mess out of everything. Knocking the deities over. I'm not joking. These things happen. It's all because of their so-called enthusiasm to get the mercy, which is just maya. Nothing to do with devotional service. Because it's not their service. You know, just like, let's say, you want to honor Prashad, and then 10 other devotees decide they want to honor Prashad, come up and start grabbing what's on your plate. Then you have a good time. No. The point is everybody has their eternal service. You do that, that's perfection. You can't do everything. Then you're a jack of all trades, master of none. Who cares about them? It's not volume. That's seeing it from economics. The more volume, the more chance I can have to get. No, but we're talking about quality. The service that's rendered is the quality is so great, therefore, it's perfect. And if you get down to it, even you think you want to do everything, if you really look into it, you're going to choose a few things that you like and you're going to leave the rest anyway. So say what you like, you're going to do that because you're an individual and there's things that will attract you and things that won't. Right? Like you want to be out there massaging Krishna's feet when he's lying in the field with a cowherd boyfriend, or you want to be carrying Krishna on your back because he won in the cowherd boyfriend things, or you want to be giving milk to Krishna for cooking in the morning, like that, or you want to be giving the fruits and flowers, or you want to be the blade of grass that he's walking on, or you want to be the servant that's carrying his lunch out there, or you want, how many of them can you do? Right? There's five rasas. You can't do all five at once. Balaram can, yes, but I think we could safely say that none of us here are Balaram. So, okay, so let's leave that one. So you got to choose one of the five rasas. Right? And the five rasas have their time. When Mother Jashoda is cooking and taking care of Krishna, the gopis don't have any entrance into that pastime. It's the way it is. You got to learn to live with it. It's your choice to choose a rasa, yeah, but you have to stay within your rasa, otherwise it's rasa vas. So that's the point. The idea is more means better, right? But there's a modern saying, less means more. Because the less is better quality. You know? Like that. I can speak for myself. Let's say we have one of these big feasts. Right? 108 preparations, 1,008 preparations, you know, whatever it is. I generally see from serving these feasts is never more than about 5 preparations that are excellent. And I found myself, is in the beginning you sit down trying to somehow or another get in a taste of every one of the preparations. Okay, you can do it if you take this much. But I found much more satisfaction sitting down with 5 preparations that I can relate to and being satisfied with that and leave the rest. That's my experience. Others have other, they want to taste all things, see the variety, whatever. This is how I've seen. But if you taste all of them, there's only a few that are excellent, super excellent. You know what I'm saying? Is that this is what you're going to do anyway. So this idea that more means more variety means more better, more volume means that, no, it doesn't work like that. We're on the absolute platform, we're not on the material platform. Because the millionaire, when he sits down with his wife and kids, doesn't enjoy any more than the man sitting in some simple little hut somewhere. In fact, you might even be able to say the man in the hut enjoys more because he's not in anxiety that at any moment, you know, a bunch of people are going to break down his door and steal everything. The quality of the service. His quality is service is devotion. Is the quality of the service by the jivas and the tatastas and the nityasiddhas and the shaktis. So here you have to cut it back down to the nityasiddhas and the shaktis. Right? Because tatastas are tatastas. Right? They have to come to the point of nityasiddha. Right? The nityasiddhas means the tatastas who are perfect. Right? Because the Shakti Tattva is not seen as far as Nitya Bhattas, Nitya Siddha, because they never can be. Jivas are the only ones that have that, that may make that choice. So as far as the quality means, depends upon the rasa, what it is, but within the particular rasa, there's no difference. But ultimately there is a point, Radharani goes beyond everybody else, even the Shakti Tattva she goes beyond. Means Mother Nayaka Bhava can only be tasted by her and Rajatani. So that's all. That's why we follow her. Means you will find a great happiness in knowing that you are serving under someone who is very special. The idea that my speciality is my connection directly with Krishna or by what I can do. No, the specialness is that we are serving under. Because technically, Vaishnav means devotee of Vishnu. Karshna means devotee of Krishna. Right? Like the Dwarkavasis and Mathuravasis, they're all Karshnas. But Gaudiya means devotee of Radharani. So we're actually devotees of Radharani. She's the devotee of Krishna. That's actually who we are. Prabhupada explains that. So we know Krishna through her. Otherwise, what do we know of Krishna? Krishna's Radharani's boyfriend. That's how we know Krishna. We don't know him separately. Otherwise, who are you? You get in front of Krishna, who are you? What Krishna you know? Right? But the son of Maharaj Nanda in Braja, is the boyfriend of Radharani. Right? So we know that Krishna. So we know him as the boyfriend of Radharani. That's how we know. That's explained in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. We don't know Krishna separately. How will we know? Because as soon as it's separate, then you don't see that Krishna. Right? You see some other Krishna. You're not going to see that Krishna. That Krishna is seen by Radharani. So we see Radharani, therefore we see that Krishna. We're perfectly in tune with Radharani, we see that Krishna. We're not in tune, we don't see. So the question is, how to get ourselves in tune with her mood of service? Not what I'm doing and this and the volume and none of that. It's, am I in tune with her? Am I pleasing her? If she's pleased, Krishna's pleased. Then you're going to see what she sees. and to what is our capacity. It's just like this. Okay, let us say we sit down to lunch. Okay? You sit down to lunch and, you know, one of the big brahmacharis sit down to lunch here. Okay? And you bring a preparation that you really like. Okay? You eat, you know, a few hundred grams. They ate a few hundred kilos. Right? Now, do you feel bad that you can't eat two buckets of, you know, cheese sabzi, you can only eat one spoon? You lament, I can't eat. You've got how much you want, you ate it to your satisfaction, you're full. Do you feel bad? No. So that's the point. If you don't feel bad here, why will you feel bad there? What is your capacity? You're fully engaged, you'll be happy. The main point is understand you'll be happy. But you'll be happy by serving someone else. Jivas are not happy independently. Because Krishna's not happy independently. He's Atmarama, he's satisfied. But happiness means interaction. Happiness means service. Krishna serves the devotees. As they relate to him, he reciprocates back. So that makes him happy. So the devotees, then they serve him. That makes their happiness. We serve the devotees. That makes us happy. So by serving, that's how we become happy. So don't worry. You'll be happy. But just give up the idea of control. Yeah. Yeah, that's what we're all trying. That's all. That's what. But my point is don't let the intelligence, you know, become clouded by this desire, because then it throws everything off. You know, because we do that on everything. That's the problem. This control we somehow or other secretly weave into everything. Because of that, then we're never able to. It doesn't function, right? Right? Because the control always creates a problem, unless it's duty. Okay. One controls for the other's benefit, like the parent controls the child for the child's benefit. But when they control the child for their own benefit, everything goes wrong in the relationship. But if they control for the child's benefit, then it works. So that's the thing, is that unless it's for the other benefit, then even whatever control is exercised, but always, neither will be happy, neither will they be happy. Yeah? Okay.
Recognize one question from Mahabharata. Draupadi always complains to Yudhishthira that you're always saying dharma protects, dharma this, dharma sati, dharma is tolerance. And she complains that does dharma really protect? Because dharma rakshati rakshita. And she was all the time praying for
you. You didn't read that Yudhishthira's instructions. He answers that. Because that's what the whole thing is about. She's doubting the process of focus, endeavor, and daiva. You know, how karma works, how religion works. So she doubted all three. And he answers and gives the answers how all three are functioning and how she has the wrong end. Because the point is he's protected, but he's out there in the forest, but he's surrounded by Brahmins and has respect. Duryodhana is in there and nobody likes him, so he's living fine. Why is it that it has to be Yudhishthira's in the palace, then only dharma is protecting him?
No, I thought she was asking for her own, because she's following dharma, but she was praying for
him. No, if you look, she never asked for her own. She always asks for Yudhishthira. So even though it appears that she's very upset in that, she's only upset for Yudhishthira's benefit. When she's getting on his case when they're in Virat, that's because they're the emperors of the world. What are they doing sitting here? And he has to be there and play dice with this lower king and be, you know, the stooge for him. He says he deserves to be the emperor of the world. So she's upset. Even her being upset and angry is only for Yudhishthira's benefit. It's never separate. She's not that kind of woman. Because she is Dana Lakshmi. She's not common. Oh, this is a question. Very good question.
Maharaj, I was wondering how come we like fall down from the spiritual world if we can see all the suffering that's going down?
It's just like this. Let us say last Sunday feast you ate so much you got a stomach ache. Does that keep you from eating that much this week?
No.
So that's the thing. If there's the idea of enjoyment, then lust is, you have to have a purpose for doing anything, right? So it's either love or lust. There's only two options. So if there's love, you'll do anything for Krishna. If there's lust, you'll do anything for lust. So when the lust for a particular object goes down, you start to see it more intellectually, then you can kind of cut yourself off from it. But then it will be somewhere else, and something else you'll be driving for. You know, you give up, you know, okay, you've fallen over too many times off your skateboard, and now you rollerblade. So until you fall over too many times on that, then you'll do something else, you know, and saying, so you'll keep changing. But it'll go down in one because the lust reduces there and it comes up somewhere else. So you have to transfer that lust to Krishna, that is love for Krishna. Then there's no problem. So that's the whole process of devotional service. We do stuff, even we're doing material activities, we don't do it in any way that will compromise Krishna's happiness. Because love is what we're trying to get to. So even we're trying to fulfill our own desires, we don't do so separately from Krishna. So Krishna's always even in our material desire. That way it becomes purified. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
When you made the remark, liberty so can have material desires. In the class,
liberated, because that's when you're liberated, then you're back to the actual tatastha platform. Right now we're not acting in tatastha, we're acting as conditioned, so we're overbalanced. Liberated means we're there, but the material desire for control and attachment is still there.
Suppose you don't have it in this material world, means you're liberated?
If you're here, unless you've descended, you have it. You're just not seeing what it means. You know, desiring anything is lust. What is the purpose of desiring it? You want a new dhoti. Why?
To maintain the body and soul together.
Maintain the body. Why do you need to maintain the body and soul? Sukadeva Goswami didn't bother with it. You know what I'm saying? So there is still something left. Oh, it may be very subtle, but it's still there.
Oh, that's very
different. Yeah, that's the point. So prema, that's why it's so rare, prema. Because you're going beyond any personal desire. So that's what makes it very special. That's what's nice. It's not ordinary. Very, very special.
Can you be influenced by the modes if you're free from material desires?
No.
Yeah.
Because that's the point. Material desire means influence the modes. It may be very subtle, but it's still there. You can still have, it's materially inclined, but it's still on the spiritual platform where you think I am advanced or I am a guru of the devotees. Because those are the final, the subtlest forms of control and enjoyment. Right? I am an advanced devotee is control. I am the guru of devotees is enjoyment. You know, so that comes back to the final and personal thing is that right now our main thing is we want to be God. But now these other questions is I want to be the devotee. Yeah. You understand? Yeah. It's the impersonal, the other ways. That's what Prabhupada says. We can never become Mother Jashoda. That's impersonalism. So that is that. Those questions are a tinge of that form of impersonalism. It's within the devotional sphere, but it's still within that. The other one is I'm just the controller, enjoyer here. That's on the other side. I'm God. The other one is I'm God's devotee. So the first one is firstly deal with that, because the other one at least you're trying to serve. You know, that the principle is there, though it's bad. But whatever it is, it means you get purified of that, and then the other one will manifest. Then you know that that's there, so then you remove that. Therefore, Trinada Pisa Nichena. So if that's cultivated from here, then in Bhava you'll get through it easy. If not, you can get stuck for hundreds of lifetimes in Bhava by these two points. You think you're advanced. So you can't cross from Bhava to Prema. You get stuck.
What happens if you become a Jivan Mukta? Then you're really liberated from the most?
Jivan Mukta means that they're liberated. So for us, Jivan Mukta means that they're situated in love for God. That's actual Jivan Mukta.
Is that a person?
Brahma-bhuta is like the beginning stage of that.
Oh,
but actual mukti, for us, is not considered liberated. We'll deal with them as if they're liberated, just like a person who dresses as a Brahmin will be dealt with as a Brahmin, even though they may be known not to be. But that's the culture, that's the etiquette. So in the same way, someone who is liberated is dealt with as liberated, but unless they come to the devotional platform, then it won't. But as far as we know, in this lifetime, they're liberated. Because it'll take many lifetimes of Brahma for them to fall out of the Brahman platform. You know what I'm saying?
No, I didn't understand the last point.
They'll go to the Brahman, but they're on the timing of Brahman. So it's just like, let's say you get out, it's very hot outside, you come inside where it's nice and cool and comfortable. How long are you appreciating that it's cool and comfortable before it becomes normal and then you look for something to do?
Like that.
Few minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, yeah. Depending upon how severe was the suffering, to that degree that extends it a few more minutes.
Yeah.
But even 10, 15, 20 minutes maximum, after that you got... So 20 minutes in the Brahman, that's a lot, and Brahma's lifetime is 3/8 of a second.
I see.
So it could be hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes of Brahma, but after 20 minutes of Brahman you fall back to the material world. So your experience in the Brahman is only 5-10 minutes, actually. So therefore, that's why the devotees laugh at
it. And what does Jivan Mukta mean for us?
Jivan Mukta means that they're on the Brahma-Bhuta platform.
Not that they have a Swarup and they have this stuff.
If you understand Brahma-Bhuta, then you understand that that's what it is. You made it back. Welcome home. Yeah. When we were in the old Gurukul here, they were both in the Vidyapeetha. And he was Patanath, he was teaching like that. He also taught also with the Bhaktivedanta Gurukul village. And Sadanava, he was a student in the Vidyapeetha. They were all there. They were all together. They were all students together in the Vidyapeetha.
So like this have to be, eh? Father have got to be like this.
Eh?
One day.
Yeah. The
boys. Right, but the modes can also create desires, isn't it?
Modes create opportunities for you to accept or reject. Okay, yeah. You're here for some time?
Yes, 2 weeks.
Okay, yeah, definitely. Let's see. Haribo, good to see you. Haribo.
But like if you're in an environment, in a mode of passion, and you come too often there, it can create a desire.
Well, because it's there, because you have there, then weakness of heart, you'll get attracted. No. It just the Maya only provides the opportunity. She never makes the decision for you. Your free will is at every moment to accept or not. She simply creates the situation that you have previously shown interest in. So as soon as you say, today you make the determination, I'm not interested in that anymore, but you have been. So she'll just say, are you sure? It's just like when you go to somebody's house, prasad. Now, will you consider it a nice, cultured serving? If they come along with it, serve you once, you come a second time, you say, no, and then they just, that's it, and they never bring it again? Or they go, no, are you sure you don't like this? No, I like this. They'll keep asking to make sure. Right? And then when they see that you don't want, then they move on. So that's Maya. Why should you, what if you actually do want? You're just saying it now because you're in a good consciousness, but then when you walk out the door, maybe it's still there. So therefore she offers.
So how to remove the weakness of the heart?
Association, sadhana, determination, contemplation.
But if you haven't tasted the higher taste, then how will you have a strength?
That you have to get to. So you have to get to strength. So you have to lose a lot of intelligence up to the platform of ruchi. but from Ruchi, from the middle of Ruchi, then from there, then you still use your intelligence, but it's now it's guided by something else. Because you have the taste, so that the mind is caught.
And that is Raganuga, means you have, the devotee must manifest.
Even if it's not, still the taste is there. So, but still your attachment to, your motive for doing it may be the taste and all that, but it's still you like to do it according to the rules and regulations, so it'll still be counted as vaidhi. Or it can be you're just doing it because you like the taste of it, and the vaidhi gives directions how it's done, but that's a separate issue. Then it's raga nuga. But in either case, taste is your driving force.
Okay,
makes sense?
I have a question from a translator's point of view. I find two phrases, one is set in motion and one is another one set in action. It's a difference. So for me, no difference. This is from the purport of today's verse.
It's like you're like steel, or my heart is like steel. That can be associated with those who are not that conventional.
One will be direct and one will be indirect. Set in action means, you know, the modes of nature. But and then, I mean, set in motion means it's like third person. You know, set in action is like second person or something. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? It's like I said, you set it in motion, or you set it, you set it in action, or they set it in motion. That kind of thing. That's just how it's being used here. Plus, you don't want to use the word twice. In English, they have this rule, you can't use something twice. You know, that's because it's, I don't know, they don't know much about poetics. Yeah. And then here, the last paragraph said it says set in action or it says set in motion?
Set in action.
But you said it here, it says set. It's in the same thing. It doesn't mean any difference, but I'm just saying it gives a slight flavor because in English it's considered bad editing if, you know, in the same sentence or in a sentence that's close enough that you'll remember the word, that they always like to use a variety like that.
But in the subtle angle, this is more direct.
There, in here, because they're using together. But otherwise, if you're using it singular, it doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter. So you just use it how it would apply in Chinese. You know, do they make a distinction? If they don't, then you don't use it. You know, if you do, you do make. Just like in some languages, they don't distinguish between clean and pure. Like that, it's the same word for both. You know? Spirit soul was just something that Prabhupada coined the phrase. He just means soul. You know, it means the individual living entity. You know, unless he's talking, yeah, spirit. But it just gets that across, because otherwise soul in English can mean that that guy has a good feeling for music. He's got soul. You know? So soul is used in a lot of different ways. You know, soul can mean what's on the bottom of your shoe. You know, I mean, soul has a lot of different usages in English. So to make sure it specifically probably coined the word, you know, or super soul. So spirit soul and super soul, these are words probably coined using the grammar of English language. He knows what he wants to say, so he wants to show meaning the soul that's spiritual. So spirit, it's not spirit, soul is actually a noun. Soul is the noun. Spirit is actually an adjective. It's describing the noun. You know, or super soul. But in Sanskrit you say atma, it's directly the noun. You don't have to separately. But otherwise it may be mistaken for a different noun. You know, or it may be the same for a verb, like he's got soul, is actually a state of existence. So it's technically, it's a intransitive verb. I mean, yeah, it's a verb that doesn't do anything. You know, so you want to establish that we're meaning a noun, and we're meaning this particular noun. So therefore then Prabhupada, knowing the system of grammar, has created the word. Right? So like that. So if already the concept of soul meaning something separate from the body, you know, is there in Chinese. You just use the local one, it works great. You know what I'm saying? English doesn't necessarily do that, because the Christians removed the concept of soul, I think, at the second conference. Again, they have a name for it, but they have these big conferences. Vatican II, yeah. Vatican II was the Nicaea. So that was, they removed all this concept of soul and reincarnation and all these things at that time, like that. I was thinking, just to mention on that, is if Jesus came, you know, back in those days, you know, to the Catholics, he would have been burned at the stake, you know, because he was too freaky. Yeah, he would have been too weird, you know. He would have been, I mean, the Jews wiped him out, the Christians would have done the same. You know, like that, you know, it's just too freaky.
Maybe Jesus has to throw them out of the temple, no? Like he did also.
Yeah, of course. It doesn't mean they're not going to get them later. Because they, you know, they had the army. That's why they couldn't do it. They went to the army. Because they didn't have the power. He had the power. So they went. That's the normal thing. That's how revolutions happen. And that's why they always end up bad. It means that the ones that are in the position don't have the power. So they go. They find a power base, either up or down. You know, so they were Brahmins, so then they went to the Kshatriyas, you know, or like the Vaishyas. Well, if the Brahmins are a problem, they go to the Kshatriyas. But if the Kshatriyas are a problem, then they'll go to the Shudras. You know, by mass they'll overpower, like that. So that's the whole thing, is looking for the power base. So does that make sense? You just use what works in your lane. You made it to my apartment.
Yes. And I'm staying.
You're staying.
And
oh, okay. Maharaj isn't coming.
No, it's changing.
Very clever. Well, of course, he always does this, so this is very normal.
There's so many sets of things. Uh-huh. And we brought with him today, only now, a few days ago.
But you can give them to him in Bombay.
Yeah, he said we should come to Bombay. He will be there 11th of February, the 19th. But he said it's very close.
Yeah, if you're flying. Otherwise it's 33, 36 hours.
Yeah. I'm not sure. He said that I should come.
Oh, yeah. No, it'd be nice. You'll find it nice. You'll
find it nice. You have some
months on the center? Is it still going to be? Not sure. It hasn't been decided. Because we had trouble last year, we were running them. But we ran into two problems. One is that a lot of the devotees who were coming then left. But it doesn't matter, size doesn't matter. The other one is that to make it more understandable, we had split it up because we were dealing with Dharma Shastra. So we split it up into men's classes and women's classes. Because the explanation is different. You know, how do they apply? But then somebody was questioning whether or why it's being given for women. Why separate? Because if you separate it, the women will ask questions and get into the details of how it applies in their life. But if you put it together, the men will ask the questions and women won't ask. So then that was why we separated. So, you know, at this point, we don't want to really deal with any of that kind of foolishness. We'll see.
Means the previous seminar was meant more for the men.
Means when you run it together, then the conversation will always move in the field of the men.
Right.
So if you want to put in points for the women, you have to put them underneath. The women will catch them, the men won't. But it's not direct, so sometimes there may be a doubt on the part of the women's on its application. So if you run it separately, then the women can ask the questions directly on that. Examples can be given in their world. So it makes it more clear. But it doesn't matter because they're subtle, so they'll catch it even from the men's stuff. like that. It just makes it. The men you can say directly to them. The women you can't say their stuff directly. You know, like that. Not in open form.
You know. Not even the things you said, like in this samadhi hall, you were giving this lecture and you mentioned about the psychology.
Those are general, but the point is the subtleties of that the women will understand, the men generally won't catch. Like that. It's just the way it works. Because you'll give the subtle and the women will catch it. So it's always side points you're going. They catch it. Like you'll see so many times something will be said, the women will laugh, the men won't laugh. Like that. So it's that the women caught the point, the men didn't. Because it was their point. Because in it, you have to give the point. It has to be practical to both. So if you're going to combine it, then you're going to have to say something that the women will catch, the men won't catch. Because the men's things you can say publicly, the women don't mind. Men don't mind. The women don't like their internal scene being discussed publicly. Like that. Some areas of it that make the men more aware that there is a woman's scene, that they like being discussed. Okay. But what goes on inside that, which is their world that the men don't see, that they don't want discussed. You can discuss it because the men won't understand it anyway, but the problem is the men get bored.
Oh, I see.
You know, and if the men get bored, then the women don't want to be part of something that men are bored of. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, there's a lot of like cultural subtleties.
So, it's a chakravyuha.
Yeah.
Can I ask one more question? What is the effect of the Gayatri on the Gaudiya Vaishnava? Because this Gayatri...
effect of which Gayatri?
Which chant? I mean, so much...
So which one? You have Vedic and Pancharatri.
Let's say the Gopal, but also the Vedic. Because the Bhagavatam starts with the Gayatri and always glorified. But I mean, so why it's glorified?
No, but you still not... You have Brahma Gayatri, which is Vedic, and you have all the others, which is Pancharatri.
Yeah.
So you mean one or the other, or you mean both?
I see the specific meaning I understand, but what effect causes it in our sadhana? Does it remove anarthas or something? What does it do?
Brahma Gayatri situates us on the Brahman platform.
I see.
And the other Gayatris and focus our particular destination.
Oh, I see.
His Hare Krishna can get you anywhere, but the Gayatri is specific. So therefore we receive Gayatris according to where we want to go. That's how the Pancharatri system works.
And this Gayatri glorified in the beginning of Bhagavatam?
Yeah, because Gayatri is a mantra for taking you out of the material world or for tasting the interaction of the spiritual world. Because Gayatri is always connected with the deity. So it's special of all mantras because it's directly connected, while others may or may not be directly connected.
And that is mantrapasana.
Our mantrapasana is Hare Krishna. And Gayatris are added to that. Just like our meal is, you know, rice, dal and all that, and the Gayatris are like some, you know, lemon, salt, achar, all that on the side as condiments.
So the Gayatri focuses or does it, you know, give pushes? Like if the Hare Krishna mantra pulls, then does it push or does it focus?
Hare Krishna does both, because the point is what's your qualification to chant Gayatri? Uh-huh. Less technically you're on the platform of goodness, the Gayatri doesn't work. So that even works is only because of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. We don't have the qualities to that they function on their own. In the Dwapara Yuga, then you can use these Pancharatra Gayatris as your japa. The general thing of Brahmins, they use the Brahma Gayatri as their japa. But neither of these will work on their own in this age. So without the Bhagavan, they won't function. It means you can't chant Gayatri and get effect from it until you come to the Brahman platform. how are you going to get to the Brahma platform? Because you can't chant to get you there. So you chant Hare Krishna, that gets you there. But at the same time, it doesn't just get you there. It takes you through, and when it's and Gayatri's end at Brahma Bhuta. Yeah. Because after then you deal with the deity. Right? The deity is manifest before you. You need those to deal with the Archamurti. But when you go to the spiritual world, then the deity is there personally. So then you deal with them there. You don't. They perform their function. The duties of the Diksha Guru have ended at Brahma Bhuta. They start at Vajanakriya and they end at Brahma Bhuta. Before that, after that, that's Siksha Guru. Though the Diksha Guru is Siksha Guru, so therefore yeah. That relates, but it continues as a Siksha relationship, not as a Diksha relationship.
I see.
Just saying that the Gayatri helps focus our attention on Vrindavan, because our Gayatris are about you know, Navadvipa and Vrindavan. So that's what our Gayatris are for. It's for helping, you know, us focus on Vrindavan.
Maybe we properly chant that second initiation is not required.
That's there. But it's not that it's wrong to have it, it helps.
No,
but that's what Prabhupada says, it's not necessary. Yeah. So that's what Prabhupada, either generally it's like for devotees who aren't very septically kind of inclined, they don't need to have it. Because even if they have it, they won't get much benefit from it. You see. But they'll get all benefit from Hare Krishna. And the Hare Krishna, by the time they get advanced to that, they don't really need it.
Yeah.
Or they can get it at that time. So there's no rush on second. First, that everybody should have. But second, those who qualify, they should get. Those who aren't, there's no need.
And how is this Om, which appears as a Bija Mantra also, which contains, or Hare Krishna contains Om also? What is it? It's
something
mystical
about the beads. He explains it. Bija is the seed of a Gayatri.
Why start it with the seed? I mean, can it not start with a flower or something, or a tree?
You ever seen a tree start from a flower? Where's the tree start from?
No, from a seed.
Okay, then why will the mantra not start from a seed? Where does the principle come that something grows from a seed? But you know what I'm saying? You're trying to see that there's differences in principle. There's only a handful of principles that the whole cosmic creation works on. And then there's unlimited applications of that. Something grows from a seed. Means because of the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, therefore then they manifest the form that is what they use in service. Yam kama krodha sahaja pranaya rubhiti. Right? It's going to manifest from that. So the seed is their desire, that love for Krishna. That manifests the form, manifests the situation, manifests the pastimes. So it all comes out of a seed. So why this won't come out of a seed?
Or does then the rest of the mantra? I mean, if there's Bija mantra and then the rest of the mantra.
Yeah.
It's not just the bead enough? Bija enough?
You want to chant, but the bead gives you more focus on. Otherwise, when you chant Om, in Om, you have to get A-U-M, you have to concentrate on the Lord, on the devotee, on the internal potency. But you break it up into three, then you get the first part Samana, second part Savideya, third part Prayojana. So in that, then you can get that. You can see all of those things.
So the rest actually describes what will come out of the beach.
It's just expansion of the beach. Just what the tree is, the expansion of the sea.
I see, like that. Okay.
But Hare Krishna is beyond that. It doesn't have a sea. It's not manifest. It's always there.
Didn't have Om in the beginning and then changed? Is that true?
That's for the Veda, for the smart person. But the Hare Krishna mantra is the original mantra. So it was never met. Then manifest from that you get Kama Gayatri. From the Kama Gayatri comes all the other Gayatris. Right? And then so from Kama Bija then you'll get the Omkar. But then when it comes through in the material world, so Omkar is last. When it comes through in the material world, Omkar is first. Then Burbu Vaswa, then the Kama Gayatri, then Purushushupta, then the Veda. That's how it works. That's explained in the discussion with what's his name? Prakashananda Saraswati.
In Charitamrita.
Yes, please. There's no difference. But diksha is a formality that the conditioned soul, you know, obliges the conditioned soul to follow. Because it's a ritual, so therefore they'll generally take. Because on the Bhagavat platform, you have to follow the instructions as, you know, as your life and soul. But because you're liberated, you'll do that. But in the conditioned state, there's a tendency to not do because, you know, as the moods swing and this and that. But because the ritual is there and that and the obligation, and so therefore then one sticks to it. You know, does that make some sense? That's the duties of the guru as a diksha guru are finished. But now siksha duties, those are eternal. But his duties, because diksha, prashnavatic diksha is meant to purify the conditioned nature. So by that time the conditioned nature is done. So the duty is finished. But then to continue but siksha, that continues eternally. So that relationship's always there. Though it's not as formal. In other words, the guru becomes a friend. Senior, but a friend. But in the material world, it's master-servant. It's master-servant. It may be more friendly or, you know, more formal. But in any case, it's always that. It's always teacher-student. In the spiritual world, then it's friend, but because they're senior friend, and therefore then they'll give guidance.
It's more important to chant Hare Krishna than the Gayatri.
It's more important to chant Hare Krishna than the Gayatri, but because you've been given the Gayatri, then you have to chant it. Because if you don't chant it, then that means you're not taking the process seriously. So then your spiritual life will be compromised. You have to get them both done. It means Hare Krishna doesn't have any rules. You can chant it any time, any place, anywhere. Gayatri has rules. It must be done morning, noon, and evening. You know, in a pure state, good, like that. But Hare Krishna is not like that. So it's not that I'll chant all my rounds, only then I'll chant the Gayatri. No, Gayatri has to be chanted its times. Hare Krishna at its times, because we're conditioned. So the Gayatris keep us from falling back into material life. That's their purpose.
Oh, that's nice.
And they keep us out of sinful life.
When you chant Hare Krishna, you have, like, you have Krishna.
Yes.
When you chant Gayatri, no.
Gayatri is that the names are non-different, but the mantra itself, as you understand it, then it is, you'll understand them. Because those are all personalities. The name is always personality. So Guru mantra is Guru, Gaur mantra is Gaur. So the best. But the Gayatri is always show the Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. Like that.
I mean, these things are not taught, they're supposed to be taught at the Brahman Diksha.
Yeah? Supposed to be.
And there's no
a lot of this talk supposed to be taught before.
Before you get the mantra?
No, not about the mantra, but about the whole principles that it's based on.
He's writing this.
That's it. That's it. Oh, okay. So. Let's try and work out something maybe, let's say next Sunday.